Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Okay, so excited to have this podcast today, Joel. I have been waiting for several weeks now to interview. You were one of the first people that I reached out to when I made the announcement as podcast host at the Ivy Podcast. Go ahead and give the audience a brief introduction on yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here. A little bit about myself. I am a recruitment headhunter, agency recruiter that's been in the business for about 5 years. And I've recently made a transition into the content marketing world, helping agency recruiters build a personal brand, particularly on LinkedIn. So I spent the last 18 months building a pretty decent sized brand on LinkedIn, got a lot of experience with that. And so now I'm helping other people to do the same thing. And so, again, just thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, absolutely. Super excited for this because I think that the audience can leverage a lot of the insight that you provide. And one of your, I guess, feel good stories is, you know, how you founded and landed yourself into this role, but we can get into that in just a little bit. We're going to start with some fire and ice questions. And I feel the vibe today. You're black, I'm red. We call it fire and ice questions because it's the ring of fire questions, but it's also to break the ice. So we want to just get to know you a little bit better and ask you super random questions along the way. So are you a coffee guy or a tea guy?
Oh, well, so I was born in England, so I still have a little bit of tea in me. Yeah, so my whole family is tea, but I am definitely like coffee in the morning, coffee in the afternoon, high energy, coffee.
Coffee. Yeah, me too. I've got that Central American coffee plantation lineage of coffee drinkers. So I feel you there. Actually, my follow-up question, which you may have just answered, most interesting fact about you that most people wouldn't associate to Joel?
Yeah, I would say it's being born in the UK. So I was born in England. And I moved here in the year 2000. And so I've
British accent.
Lossy accent.
Along the way.
Yeah, when you're in middle school and you have a different voice than everybody else, doesn't go well. And so I, in the attempt to be cool, I started saying, "What's up, man?" and "Hey, everybody." And before you know it, I'm sounding American.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so this one's pretty interesting. What's the worst job you've ever had?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Can't say recruiter, because that's your thing, yeah, right? So like, something maybe you throw up.
Yeah, I worked in a call center for about 6 months, and I was working for an agency that represented one of the big banks, and I would literally call people and say, "Hi, it's Joel. I'm representing so-and-so bank. Do you have a couple minutes to chat about your recent experience?" And I'd run them through a script. And I did that. And I actually was good at it, but it was, you can imagine. I mean, it's
brutal.
You're cold calling people for reasons that they don't even care about. So it was tough. It was
but
tough.
But you know what? I can see how that maybe set the foundation for a recruiter, Joel, because that's a large premise about what you do, similar to like, you know, you finding a restaurant gig and how that lends to customer service, foundational experience. So pretty bad job, but it all helped along the way, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right. So we're all busy. We've got a lot going on. What do you do? What was one tip that you would give the audience on how to stay organized?
I mean, that's a great question. I probably asked that question to other people. I think for me, what I'm finding is, you know, you got to have the time blocking and you got to have that schedule made a week, you know, at the beginning of the week. So I like to take my Sundays and I'm just mapping out time for everything from, you know, going to the gym to content planning, content creation, and then client work and sales work too. So those are usually the four areas that I block it into. And, but I do like to leave a little bit of time for flexibility as well, obviously, because things can just change nowadays, as we all know.
Yeah.
So Yeah,
I like that. It gives you the head start in the week, so you don't have this like impending panic when you wake up on Monday, like, oh shit, what I need to do.
100%. And I'm definitely more of that person who would try and fly back. Like, definitely when I was in other positions, I was very spontaneous and I wouldn't have a plan. Now I see the value in being organized, but it's something too that it's a huge struggle. But you know, it's dividing those revenue activities with the activities you got to get done as well, and really planning that out smartly.
Yeah, absolutely. Revenue generation activities. Love that. Okay, so this is the last one. Your biggest mentor and some advice that they've given you that you take with you to the grave. That one's kind of deep.
No, I love that one. I think, so my biggest mentor over the last year is a guy called Adam Posner. I don't know if you...
I've seen him online.
With Adam. Yeah, so Adam, he's got a wealth of experience when it comes to marketing, and he's also kind of run his own recruitment agency for the past 3 years, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's just like ongoing mentorship, but the advice that he always gives, particularly with content, is to really be true to who you are in everything that you're putting out. And he's great because there's moments where I'll put something out on social media that maybe is just there for vanity, or maybe is there just to get the likes and the comments. And he's really quick to call me out on that. So that's just the ongoing advice that he gives. It's just authenticity. It's really being who you are, right, and sticking to that as much as you can.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I think, you know, some of the biggest mentors are the ones that push us to the hardest and make us question how we're doing things. So.
He's
I know that
quick.
He was with Gary Vee for a little while. He's got some mentorship through Gary Vee. So I can see, you know, the fact that he's done the recruiting thing. He's got some great marketing appeal and some great marketing experience to leverage and how much that's influenced you. So this is a question that I'm going to be asking everyone that I interview in the staffing and recruiting space. No one ever is 8 years old and says, you know what? I want to be a recruiter when I grow up. So how did you find yourself within this very interesting industry that you and I are both a part of?
Yeah, I think, you know, and just interviewing a lot of recruitment pros myself, you know, it is always that classic, like I fell into it, and I am definitely no different to that. Mm-hmm. I graduated college in 2011. So it was right off the back of the recession. So it was really, really hard for me to find a job. And so I took a job in retail banking because that's what my degree was in. It was in finance. And so I did that for a number of years. I did that for about 5 years, ended up, you know, underwriting people's loans, working with cash flow, getting into investments, but it was really suit and tie. Mm-hmm. And I think anybody who's seen any of my content, probably anybody who's watching this right now, you probably would be get a feel that I'm not a suit and tie person. It's just not a rule follower. And obviously the bank is extremely regulated. So I did that for a number of years, and I got to a point where I had another mentor who happened to be my past CEO, and I reached out to him in this time, just was like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, the next step is, you know, senior vice president and then president. And it's just, I could work the next 30 years and just work my way up this hierarchy of positions, but it's just not me, and I'm just not enjoying it. And he had just started up a recruitment agency in the Milwaukee area. And at the time I was living in Southern California. So he said, I'm totally cool for you to live out in California, but I want you to come and get a feel for the company I'm building, what I'm building. And at that time, his company had, I think, six full-time people. And I was like, this sounds amazing. And he's like, you'll get to work remotely and you're going to be recruiting. And I'm like, I have no idea how to recruit. He's like, don't even worry about it. I'll teach you everything you need to know. So yeah, I packed my bags, quit my job at the bank, packed my bags, moved back to Wisconsin, which is where he was based in Milwaukee area. And yeah. And right from day one, I was, they had a slightly different recruitment model. It wasn't contingent. It wasn't retained. It wasn't full desk. It was, you have your salespeople and you have your consultants, and I was a consultant. So right from day one, I'm meeting with clients. I have no idea what I'm talking about with recruiting, but it was, you know, it's like you figure it out. And I did the research on the roles I was working on, did the research on the industries, the companies, and started building relationship with hiring managers.
What niche were you placing in?
At first I was a generalist. So I was a generalist for about 2 years. So I worked with a lot of people in like the trade show space, which is obviously dead right now. But the trade show space, I did, one of the first roles I placed was a design engineer for, they did massive like lifts that you'd find in like a car dealership or where they manufactured these massive lifts that would lift cars. So I did that.
A little bit of event planning and some trade shows and not knowing what the heck you were doing along the way. You were figuring it out. But you know what? My respect level just kind of went up for you a little bit, because I think something you and I both have in common is that we completely turned our backs to corporate America. So
And you know what? It's so funny because it's like the banking environment was so, it was really stuffy, and I was good at it because I'm good at math. I'm good with people, that sort of stuff. So it was good. But I remember the first week they're like, okay, you need to either have a really big beard or you need to shave it off. Cause I had it in between, cause that was a style. And I'm like, what? You're telling me to shave my face? And then it was like the next week, your style is a little bit too modern. Like, we want you to wear like kind of baggier suit. And I'm just like,
no way. Wow.
I was like, okay, this seems insane. But I'm going to do it cause you're paying decent and all this sort of stuff. And then moving over to the startup world where it was, we were remote. This is 5 years ago. We were all remote. Everything was through Zoom calls already. It was like, figure it out as you go. We're working out processes. So it was a completely different environment. Mm-hmm. And from a recruitment perspective, I think the biggest challenge that people have coming into the recruitment game is you usually get full desk where you're stuck in a role where you're trying to sales. You're trying to prove that you know something about an industry, but you don't. You're then trying to win sales. You're trying to recruit people. I had the luxury of day one meeting with presidents, CEOs, hiring managers, and strategically talking to them about the types of positions they're trying to fill, how we're going to do it, how we're going to strategize. And so I got an acceleration in relationship building right from the get-go, right, which I don't think a lot of agency recruiters that I talk to, I think that first 2 years is a lot less structured and a lot more sink and swim. So I am really thankful for the start that I had in recruiting. And I believe that it built a good foundation for understanding the process, but also just understanding the internal process as well. And I'm really thankful for that as well. So it was kind of cool.
That's pretty awesome. Cause you're right. Most people have to do that sink or swim mentality going into it. So, all right. So let's talk about personal brand and where you've leveraged yourself, you know, in the span of a year. I think you're at, I don't know, 40,000 followers, 30,000 followers on LinkedIn. How do you think that's going to transform itself into the recruiting and staffing space?
Great question. So I think when I look at the different industries that are around, I think, and I've worked in a number of these, like banking, construction, legal, real estate, staffing and recruiting, a lot of these industries are pretty old school in the way that you go about them. So
totally right. I think that's the notoriety within the industry. It's just being kind of old school.
It's old school, which is good. You know, I mean, in some ways, because I think in old school, in the old school, which I would consider, you know, heavy cold calling activity, building relationships over the phone, building relationships face to face, those things are great. And they set the foundation for how you build relationships. So those skills are really important. But I think where the personal branding comes in now more than ever is we obviously have hit a stage where digital and Zoom and video communication and being able to build relationships virtually has accelerated. So anybody that tells me right now that their plan for 2021 is to go to live events with people and network, I don't know like what planet you're living on. It's not happening. Anybody that's telling me right now that they're making 20 calls a day, cold calls a day and being successful, it's not happening. You have to make 100 to 150 cold calls. You need to send out a lot of emails. And so you have to have a lot more outbound activity because you don't have that same face-to-face, you know, relationships that are going on. So I think what we've seen because of obviously COVID-19, which everybody hates talking about because it's overplayed. But with that, obviously you get just a big decline in those face-to-face interactions, those face-to-face meetings. And so now there's a newer generation of people who are coming into an industry that's very archaic and old school, but they're realizing, okay, I can't not have a presence online. I don't need to be an influencer. Mm-hmm. I don't need to have millions of followers, but I do need to have a presence, and I do need to put the art of building an online presence into what I'm doing. And I think for any role that's sales-based or relationship-based, people now are just realizing you have to have something online. You have to have a podcast. You have to have, you know, YouTube channel. You have to have something, because the buyer mentality now is, it's not just, hey, I'll talk to you on the phone and believe everything that you say. It's literally, what's your name? Let me type you into Google and I'm going to see what pops up. And if you have nothing,
pick up the phone. Like, people aren't picking up the phone. Statistically, there's reports that show, how many times do you pick up a cold call? I mean, like, let's be honest with one another. So that's
surprising. I don't. Exactly.
Yeah.
And it depends who you reach in. I mean, I think, like, if you are reaching salespeople, picking the phone's probably a decent method because they're on the phone. Salespeople are on the phone. Mm-hmm. But I had a guy on my show who told me that his expectation for his recruiters is 100 cold calls a day minimum. And to get the same results that 10 years ago, it was 20 calls. And I think my theory, my belief is, you're still going to have to do outbound activity like cold calls and emails, but you have to start thinking about, how am I going to inbound attract people? How am I going to start creating a machine that is bringing people and pulling people in towards me, mm-hmm. or at least throwing out my name enough places to where I make those cold calls, they've got familiarity with who I am. I don't see cold calling getting better. And I don't see it completely dying either. I always see it as one of those things that you can get lucky with. But I think if that's all you're relying on, you know, as millennials, as Gen Z starts to penetrate the markets and they become more decision makers, you're going to have a really hard time cold calling people. You're just going to have to strategize something else.
Some generational shifts happening for sure. So we're talking to that recruiter now, and they decide to implement some personal branding, at least steps that they could complement to their cold calling, to their email campaigns. What would be those three steps that somebody could start implementing tomorrow to at least initiate a presence online?
Step one, find people within your space, or find people who are in the recruiting space that have a great online presence, mm-hmm. and follow them. So mm-hmm. just look at what other people are doing. Mm-hmm. In your industry. So if you're in tech space, follow the tech, you know, influencers, for lack of a better word, on LinkedIn. Follow the recruitment influencers on LinkedIn and see the techniques that they're using, see what kind of content they're putting out, to start consuming that and start connecting and just start getting a feel for that. Step two would be blocking off time each day to engage with other people. So I don't think the first option is to just start creating and start a YouTube channel. I think the first option is consume, then engage with other people. So engage with those people, start leaving comments, start, you know, getting kind of into that community, start making connections, start finding your prospects on LinkedIn and start engaging with their content. Mm-hmm. And then the third would be more around creating the content, I guess, in terms of starting to brainstorm topics that you think that you could talk about or you could post about, and start thinking there. But I think that that's the last place you go. I think the first place is to start consuming, engaging, and then creating.
And it's not even this premise behind, okay, you need to create a YouTube channel now. It's more so, what's your quick opinion on something, and start sharing, you know, relevant material around that, as opposed to going into this all in one investment.
And I think you bring up a great point, because the biggest place where I see people make a mistake, and it's the same with going to the gym, it's the same with saving money, is they go, man, I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week. And then they do it for 2 weeks and you just get burned out because it's such an extreme change. And then you give up again for another 6 months until someone else reminds you.
I'm totally guilty of that. I'm guilty of that in the content game.
I'm guilty of it. And I think with content, what happens is people go, I've got to invest in a microphone. I got to get a ring light. And before they've even done anything, they spent $1,000. Then they go, then they're like, all right, I'm going to do this content schedule and I'm going to commit to every single day. And what happens is anytime you make a commitment that's just too much, you fail and then you give up and then you stop. And so that's where I just advise, like, just start consuming, take half an hour a day and just scroll through LinkedIn, start leaving comments, start seeing what's out there. Do that for a couple of weeks. If you can commit to half an hour a day of doing that, you've got a good foundation to start spending the half an hour a day to maybe posting more, connecting with people more. Mm-hmm. But it just, and that is how my journey started. Like I just for everybody out there, I post 3 times a day now on LinkedIn. I post 3 times a day on TikTok. I run multiple live streams. I'm on a couple of other apps as well. So I'm doing a lot.
Is that what you're planning out on Sundays? Is this is going to be my content post for Monday through Friday, 3 times a day. So I'm looking at 15 different ideas. I've planned them out on Sunday.
The Sunday for me is more just planning my actual time. And okay. I'm at a place now, which you get to in a content journey where I can be spontaneous in a moment. So I can just sit at my keyboard and in 10 minutes, I can write out a LinkedIn post mm-hmm. in the moment. And I've learned to be able to take whatever I'm thinking about or an idea and just generate an idea in the moment. But it's taken a year and a half of being consistent and it took me about a year to get to that point. So initially on that Sunday, if it helps you to break ideas down, then sure, take a Sunday on it, you know, say Monday, I want to talk about how to cold call a candidate. Tuesday, I want to talk about perseverance and how to, you know, just keep pushing in this game. Wednesday, I want to talk about interview and career tips. Thursday, and if it's going to help to plan that at first, mm-hmm. but it's like anything, the more you do something, the better you get. Mm-hmm. And once you get to a level where you're super consistent and you've been doing it, it starts to become just, I believe a natural thing for most people. Mm-hmm. For some people, I think it's a little bit more of a challenge. You might need to work with someone. You might need to find a coach. But like you say, initially having that planning time helps. For me, it's just, I just need that to plan that time to be able to do it. And then I think the biggest thing for people is it's this fear mentality and the fear of looking stupid, looking dumb. What are the people going to think? If you're a CEO and you're listening to this, I know what you're thinking. Well, what if my client sees it and they just think it's stupid? I will tell you the truth of this. When you first start something, nobody's going to see it. And it's just, that's not how the algorithm works. It's not going to show your post to a million people. Mm-hmm. And if they do see it and they don't like it, they'll just scroll right past. They won't engage with it. But chances are, if you step out and you break past that fear and it's a client that you've worked with a lot and you're speaking your value and you're bringing your authenticity, it's hard for me to believe that somebody's going to not do business with you over that. And if they did, I'd question whether or not they were even a good client in the first place. I get really passionate about this.
No, I think you just dropped the mic. Like, that's that authenticity. And if you are truly about bringing value and that's what you speak to, why would you question somebody not liking that online? And is it even worth it at that point?
No. So, and I think that's the mindset that people have, the creators that I know have, is they've switched past the fear and gone, you're going to get trolls. You're going to get people that don't like your stuff. I don't care about those people. I really don't. What I care about is this like microcosm of people that are going to be attracted to what I'm doing and what I'm selling. And those are the actual people that I want to work with. Mm-hmm. So when you start to see content as something to attract people and actually repel other people that you never were going to work with anyway, that's when it starts to become powerful. So when I look at my inbound leads now, there's nothing like working with a client that came to you because they like your content. And the other people that are like, this is stupid. I get people all the time, you know, whatever. They're like, your content, you're this is irrelevant, or you'll never make it. Cool. You know what? I you just saved me, you know, 3 hours of trying to get a hold of you, because you just proved to me in an instant, you came to me and told me you didn't want to work with me. Perfect. Move on. So the question that CEOs need to ask is not, what are my three biggest clients going to think? The question you should be asking is, or the viewpoint you should be taking is, what about the three amazing prospects that I've been trying to get in that are bigger than my current clients? What are they going to think? And are they going to be attracted to it? And I think that's the mindset shift that creators, content creators
and if you're studying what they're liking and what they're engaging in, and you're speaking to that, it can only add relevancy to how they will engage with you, or that appeal that they could have with you.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Yeah, so we've got two more questions. Let's get into Clubhouse. You hear it, you see it, everyone. It's this cool, fancy new social media platform. I think there's a lot of arms up in the air, like, oh my God, LinkedIn is losing that organic algorithm. And then there, you see this exodus, or at least this popularity rising towards Clubhouse. What is it? Where is it going? And what do you think about it in general?
Yeah. So obviously when this airs, I mean, I think Clubhouse is growing pretty quickly. So there's a good chance that a lot of people who are listening, if you haven't heard it when we recorded it, you may have heard of it in 3 weeks. But essentially Clubhouse is a social media platform that's just audio based. So you don't have a news feed. You don't have like a discovery channel that's based on like what you see or posted content. What you have is lots of rooms. So the news feed is basically lots of chat rooms with different topics, and you can see how many people are in the room. You can see who is in the room, and you're able to join into a room. So let's say you're scrolling down a news feed and you see a topic that says how to grow a real estate business. You can click into that room. You can see the speakers, and you can see everybody that's listening. And when you jump into the room, you join as a listener. So you can't speak, all you could do is listen, but it gives you an option to raise your hand if you've got something to say or you've got a question. And then the moderators who set up the room, they have the power to bring you up as a speaker. So the way I've been looking at it is with the really big rooms where you've got a Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Tai Lopez, you got these huge names. That is more of like a podcast feel, where if you're in there long enough and you raise your hand, you'll probably get to ask a question. You have that feel to it, but that's more of like a podcast where it's a lot more informational. And then you have these micro rooms with 5 to 10 people that are highly effective for networking. So what I've been doing is jumping in and out. You know, like I'll be at the gym, I'll be listening to one of these really big rooms. It's a live kind of like a podcast. It's interactive. People are asking questions. And then I'll separate, actually time out throughout the day and jump in and go into some of these smaller rooms where I can be a speaker a lot easier and get to know people. So I think the applications of where it goes, I think it's super powerful in terms of if you're a coach, if you're running a webinar, if you've got a podcast, I think you're going to be able to bring people in from other social channels into this as more of an interactive voice. So let's say if me and you were having this conversation, people are just watching it, listening to it, but they have a question. Right now, the only way they can interact with us is by reaching out to us after the show, sending me a DM saying, hey, I heard you on a podcast, I got a question. Clubhouse allows you to do that in real time. So
interesting. Do you see it comparing to the B2B, just like LinkedIn, like becoming a social media competitor to what is the LinkedIn audience? Or do you see it kind of falling into that B2C, Instagram, kind of Facebook type of audience?
I see it falling into a lot of different applications. So it's not going to replace social media, because you have to have, there's a time investment for it, right? So like on LinkedIn, you can hire a VA and they can do all of the interacting with you. You can automate things, you can schedule things. So you can automate your content schedule. You can't do that in Clubhouse. You've got to be in the room actually speaking in real time to people. So there's a big time investment, which is going to limit what people can do, whereas social media is still going to exist. You post your picture, you post your content, people are still going to interact with it. It's an easier interaction in some ways. I see it more of a business to business networking than B2C.
Okay.
I think like TikTok would probably be the big B2C one coming up, and Instagram still. Those are the two. But I also see it as a great opportunity for, or a great application for people in recruiting, for example. So like you could host a, you know, some sort of like speed type interview on Clubhouse. So if you've got an opening, you could have a Clubhouse room that says, come work at this company. We're going to have, you know, like interviews. I think you can have there's closed room options. So if me and you're in a room and we're having a great conversation, I could be like, Angela, let's go to a closed room real quick and continue this conversation. So you can have a closed room, a lot of cool applications.
That's awesome.
But I've also in there seen like there's a lot of political discussions. So, and it's kind of cool because there's right now everything is text-based. So if you disagree with someone on Facebook, it turns into this like big writing thing that takes like 3 days. This is like, hey, you got something to say, say it in front of everybody and let's have this live conversation. So
I wonder what the troll is going to evolve to in a platform like Clubhouse. I mean, they have to be ready to speak their truth in front of everyone. It's much easier to leave a comment and be an asshole that way.
and I've seen some, there's a couple of people who were saying that they were in a room and like these three people got on stage and they were making like, you know, whatever sexual noises or something that was like really inappropriate to the room.
Yeah.
So I think every platform is going to have that, or you might just get that person that's on there, you know, that just hates you and just like, you're, you know, everything you're doing is complete garbage. I think the cool thing about it, even with that, is like, as a moderator, you can mute people and you can get people out of there.
That's good.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of cool applications, but I think the fact that it takes so much time, that's going to be an interesting one to play out. Cause
that's a little bit more authenticity behind it all.
Yeah. I mean, Grant Cardone, for example, like he's got people that manage his Instagram, that manage his Facebook. Like it's not him who's putting out that content. It's him. Obviously he has an influence over that. Same with Gary Vee. He'll have an influence on what's being put out, but he's got teams that do it. But on Clubhouse, you can't have somebody who's not you like interacting as you, because the interaction is your voice. It's your own thoughts. And and so that's been cool as well, because you might think someone's like a real jerk through their content, which some of these guys, like they get misunderstood because their content is so, you know, big and like bold. But then when you get them on a Clubhouse situation and they're actually answering questions, you get a really unique look into like how smart and how intelligent these guys are and how well they actually know business. And so there's a couple of people I've heard where I'm like, I actually hate your content, but like, I love the advice you're giving to people and the real talk and the help that you're really giving. So yeah, it's
seeing the content creator through another lens, and it's garnered a lot of attention at least. So we'll see where it goes. All right, last question.
Yes.
What would be the advice that you would give to that entry-level recruiter going into the space, super green, not knowing what the heck they're doing, the Joel 5-6 years ago? What advice would you give to that person?
Yeah, I love that question. I ask that one a lot too to a lot of the guests that I have. I think my personal advice to somebody would be, number one, find a mentor and somebody you can trust. And if your company hasn't given you like a mentor or a manager that you feel comfortable with, like find somebody that you like their style, you like the way they're doing it, they're really successful, and just ask them like, will you mentor me? Will you help me? And as much as you could find that person, I think that will help. And then the only other piece of advice I'd have is, the first 2 years of anything you do that's sales related or that's commission based sucks, and it gets better. And this is actually the point where you do 90% of your learning. And if you can get through that point, and if you can be encouraged enough to get through and understand that there's roller coasters, there's ups and downs, I think you come out of that stronger and better, and you'll be highly successful, like money wise, career wise, and, super fulfilling. So that'd be my advice.
That's awesome. So find the mentor and know that it's not going to be easy, but you got to just ride through it. You got to ride through it. And that's true. Yes. I think one of the biggest things that an advantage is, you know, that recruiters and salespeople have is that they're people person. So at the end of the day, you know, as long as you know that you have some ease in conversations and dialogue, then you're already halfway through the battle, I feel like. So
yeah,
awesome. Well, Joel, it's a pleasure, man. Happy New Year. You're my first podcast of 2021. It's starting off a little crazy, but we did it.
So. I know, right? Well, thanks for having me. And anyone who's out there too, if you want to reach out on LinkedIn, just search for me, Joel Algy. I'm the only Joel Algy in the world. So if you just Google me, you'll find all my social profiles. Yep. And appreciate the opportunity to just be on this podcast and share a little bit of my story. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see you on the flip side, Joel Algy. You guys find him on LinkedIn. And then thanks for having us. Maybe we'll have another show sometime. So
yeah, we'd love that.
Thanks.
All right, you too.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.